And the message is, company directors beware. It's not good enough to turn up to board meetings and skim documents or take the advice of others as to what they contain. Because if the statements prove to be wrong or misleading, directors will be held liable. That's the message from a High Court ruling yesterday, which upheld a guilty verdict against directors and executives of the former asbestos manufacturer, James Hardie. The case centres around a company statement released to the Australian Stock Exchange 11 years ago, which said that a compensation foundation James Hardie had established for its asbestos victims was, quote, fully funded and provided certainty for victims. When that wasn't the case, it was in fact underfunded by $1.5 billion. Professor Ian Ramsey is Director of the Centre of Corporate Law and Securities Regulation at Melbourne University. He's one of Australia's leading corporate law experts. Professor Ramsey, good morning. Welcome to Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
This was an action brought by the corporate regulator ASIC way back in 2007, ending yesterday in the High Court. Can you just remind us what the seven directors have been found guilty of?
Yes, indeed, Fran. So, as you said a moment ago, 11 years ago, in February 2001, the board of directors of James Hardie voted to approve a draft announcement to the stock exchange, and therefore to the public, that said that the foundation they'd set up would provide certainty and was fully funded, but it was seriously misleading. So, in other words, the court found that by voting to approve that very misleading announcement, the directors had breached their duty of care.
Why did the High Court uphold the original verdict yesterday, overturning the New South Wales Court of Appeal?
Well, there were a couple of important differences between the two courts. One was, very interestingly, the High Court said a particularly important matter was the board minutes, because the meeting was held in February 2001, Fran, mm-hmm. and 2 months later at the next board meeting, the same board of directors voted to approve the minutes for the February meeting, and those very minutes said, we had approved this draft announcement to the stock exchange. And the High Court said, that's very important evidence, and there's nothing that we've been told that would say that it was wrong. Mm-hmm. So that was probably the most important factor in this very important judgment yesterday.
So approving, basically, the High Court's reminding directors that approving a statement to the stock exchange is a big deal. What message does this send to company directors, that you have to read all the documents you put your name to, or that you have to actually test the veracity of those documents to the point of making your own inquiries?
Yes, a couple of important messages here, Fran. Firstly, in terms of the documents that boards of directors receive, that they need to be identifying the important ones, reading them, questioning management about the accuracy of them, whether it's board minutes, which clearly are important. I mean, one director of James Hardie acknowledged before the court that he didn't read board minutes. Mm-hmm. The High Court stresses the importance of minutes in terms of accurately recording what's going on at the company. But another important message is, of course, for the board, when it receives information, to ensure that on public announcements that are important, that the information is accurate. And even if the board doesn't personally sign off on public announcements, and it won't in big organisations, the board is certainly responsible for ensuring that systems and processes are in place within the company, that when information goes out into the public, it is accurate.
It's a lot of work. To some extent, you can't blame people for skimming documents. We all do that. But what is the reality in boardrooms today? Do some directors not do their homework? Do they treat their board positions as sinecures rather than responsible management positions, in a sense?
I think practice varies, Fran, but clearly what we've seen over a number of years now is a kind of ratcheting up of expectations. And I think most people would say that's quite reasonable because after all, these are important positions at the top end of town, so to speak, Fran. They are quite well paid. And the courts have said time and time again that directors must be diligent, they must monitor the affairs of the company. The very important judgment of last year in the federal court Centro, where the board of Centro was found liable for breaches of their duty because they'd signed off on seriously misleading financial statements, all sends a collective message about boards to be active and engaged in what they do. And of course, one argument that the directors made in Centro was that they were swamped with information. They were getting board packs that were sometimes 1,000 pages or more, and they couldn't possibly read everything. But the court said, no, we don't accept that as an argument that, in a sense, by being swamped by information, you can overlook mistakes. It's too easy to overlook mistakes. You, the board, are responsible for deciding what information you receive. You're the highest decision-making body in the company. And that's another important message for boards of directors, to be very careful about telling management what documents they want in what format, so
yes,
they're not swamped by information.
Yes, they can direct their executives on how to deliver it, I suppose. It's 7 minutes to 7 on breakfast. Our guest this morning is Professor Ian Ramsey, one of Australia's leading corporate law experts. Ian, a lot of directors hold several directorships at the same time, and I often wonder if there should be a cap on that. But more broadly, do you think this decision will make people think twice about taking on company directorships? Because that's certainly what the Institute of Company Directors is concerned about. It says, in an environment where regulation and red tape is increasing, the role of a company director is becoming increasingly onerous, and this is having a detrimental effect on board recruitment and retention. What's your view?
Well, Fran, I would say that I think the position of a board director has become more onerous over time, but I don't believe that we're at a situation where boards of directors are saying they cannot recruit highly qualified directors. In fact, I think it's the opposite. I think many talented people are seeking board positions. In fact, we're having an active debate at the moment across the country about whether boards are diverse enough. In other words, whether too many of our boards look too narrowly in terms of the people that they recruit to the boards. So I think over time, have expectations increased of our company directors? I think the answer to that is yes, because you go back 20 or 25 years ago, Fran, and there was a concept, particularly in smaller companies, of having passive directors who would just be signed on. That, we're long gone from that.
How much do directors get paid? Is there an average kind of fee?
Fran, I think in the top 100 companies, we're going to find for non-executive directors, it's well into the $100,000, something in the $100,000+ for the top 100 companies. The chair of the board will typically get paid a multiple of that.
Okay. So it's a significant investment. What does this mean for ASIC? Because ASIC has had a run of losses in the courts, and it's been a bit of a laughingstock in some quarters. Will this help return some credibility to the regulator?
So I think the High Court decision yesterday is an important victory for ASIC. Last year in the Centro judgment, again, another important victory for ASIC. At the same time, Fran, you're quite correct. They've had some significant losses over the years. The litigation they brought following the collapse of OneTel in particular was regarded very negatively, I think, in a number of respects. And also I think ASIC suffers a problem, which is they're judged on a small amount of what they do, namely high-profile litigation. Mm. But I think at the end of the day, clearly yesterday's judgment would have been quite a boost for the regulator.
And any ramifications for other cases in the courts? There is a long-running case between ASIC and Fortescue Metals Group founder Andrew Forrest over statements it filed.
Indeed. I think for those with an interest in corporate governance, corporate law, the next High Court judgment in the corporate law area against Fortescue and its managing director will be significant. And why do I suggest that? It really turns on issues of continuous disclosure. Mm-hmm. So yesterday's High Court judgment was about just what we might call a one-off disclosure, a very special one-off disclosure where the company was restructuring itself and setting up a special foundation. But listed entities, listed companies, are subject to an ongoing obligation to continually disclose material information. Very important, if you like, for all of us who invest directly or indirectly in the share market for this law to be enforced. And ASIC alleges that the company failed to comply with its disclosure obligation.
Okay.
So that decision will be very important.
And just very briefly, Ian, another high-profile white-collar case, the saga involving senior executives of the Health Services Union, the allegations of fraud and corruption. A report this week suggests that the $17 million paid out at the union without a tendering process. Unions aren't subject to the Corporations Act. Should they be?
Fran, I think there's quite a strong argument, and it's been interesting to see the government indicate that the regulation in this area does need to be strengthened, because one reason why we impose stringent obligations on company directors, particularly in the public area where the public invest funds is that those funds, in a sense, are held on behalf of the public, and the directors are in a what we call a fiduciary relationship with the company. And so I think in terms of unions, where union members pay membership funds over, we would expect high standards of loyalty and acting with reasonable care and diligence on behalf of the senior officers of unions.
Mm. Okay. Ian Ramsey, thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
Thank you, Fran.
Professor Ian Ramsey is Director of the Centre of Corporate Law and Securities Regulation at Melbourne University. He's one of Australia's leading corporate law experts.